I'm ready to create. I'm ready to see the next level. I'm ready to see the new paradigm.
Is it called 5th edition?
That's not like the official name yet.
Okay.
It's still next. We're still not really sure what we want to call it when it comes out.
Well, it ain't going to be 6th edition.
Probably not.
Well, no, they could call it just Dungeons and Dragons.
That's what we'd like to do. Because the thing is, if you call it, like, if you emphasize the 5th, is it confusing to new players? I mean, how many people actually really care about it? So, I mean,
you should take a page from Apple and just call it the new Dungeons and Dragons.
It's new always.
Well, isn't the idea that it's an all-encompassing edition, right?
Yeah.
So I would say Dungeons and Dragons, right? I mean, this is the...
This is like the Metallica album, Metallica.
There you go.
Exactly, right? I mean, it's supposed to be the essence of what it is.
But they couldn't just call it Dungeons.
No.
Because then people would be like...
We're the dragons.
We're the dragons.
Exactly. I mean, the sense then would be that you were holding back on the dragons just to charge later.
We're going to release a book later that's dragons.
Dragons.
Right now, you guys just have Dungeons. Enjoy.
Oh, man. No, it's true, though.
I'll play when there's dragons.
Exactly. And you don't want that early bird to be like, listen, I'm going to hold off for greater value.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I mean, I know you guys are having this conversation internally.
Or, you know, knowing WotC, they'd release a book that's just the ampersand.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, oh, come on, guys. We're not even at dragons yet?
Really? This book just simply covers the idea of inclusion?
Yeah.
That's not sufficient.
What's next?
Yeah. That's not a value.
Sorry. Okay.
Okay, we're done. So what's up? I mean, how do you want to help us learn this new stuff? Because, I've never been out to a playtest. I know Mike has seen new stuff.
I saw the very early, like the first draft.
Yeah, and that's more than I've seen. And I know that people have been at events, you know, at other tabletop type events and played it.
Mm-hmm.
And I might have a chance to do it at PAX or something, but I mean, I don't have word one.
Okay.
So I need.
I've lived it, kids.
Have you played it?
Failhour took me through. I think my NDA was on that. He told me it was, but we played through a bit.
Was it cool?
It felt very old school.
It's different, right?
It was like, we better go back to town and hire some NPCs. We're not going to make it very far into this cave.
Oh, you mean in terms of difficulty?
Yeah.
Yeah, I took our group through that.
There's danger.
Goblin thing, too.
Yeah? Oh, well, here.
I mean, the reality was that if they picked the wrong cave, it's just game over.
That's what I did. And I ran in as if I was 4th edition Binwin.
Yeah.
And I was going to get all my gear back if a rust monster ate me.
Right, and all your tanking shit, right?
So everything's going to be fine. And I did cleave one orc in half.
Yeah.
But the other four had spears, and Kenneth couldn't heal me again unless he drank some orange juice and slept for 2 days. So, felt good.
All right, well, here, listen. So you, long story short, you need to educate us.
All right. That's what I'm here for, right?
So, all right.
So basically, as far as converting your characters go, so I've got, like, these Word docs open. I'm just going to take notes.
Actually, hold on. Let's start even before that. Let's start in the primordial era.
Okay, before...
My name is Jerry Holkins.
Okay.
And I write under the pseudonym Tycho Brahe, but I am also, for the purposes of this podcast, Omendron, a half-elf cleric, who of some repute, who operates the Acquisitions Incorporated Adventuring Expedition Organization. And I'm here with my employees, who will introduce themselves at this point.
I'm more of a freelance operative who happens to be right now employed by Acquisitions Incorporated. My name is Mike Rahulik, also known as Gabe. I draw Penny Arcade. And I am Jim Dark Magic.
I am also a freelancer. Oh, who am I kidding? I am a dyed-in-the-wool employee.
A lifer.
Oh, yeah.
But you like the medical benefits.
I need the medical benefits, and I love the toys.
That's right.
I mean, this you keep me in, like, the Harry Potter version of the new axe.
Yeah.
You name things, so I'll let you name the axe. But
we'll work it out.
I'm Scott Kurtz. Otherwise known as that asshole online. And I draw PvP. And I play the impulsive dwarven warrior Binwin Bronzebottom.
Fire enthusiast.
Danger expert. Trap tripper.
That's right.
And I'm Mike Merles. I'm the senior manager at WotC. I work on D&D.
That's really funny. You're Mike Merles?
I am.
It's so funny. Like, I only know your name.
Really?
Oh, I know you as a piece of ASCII...
like text.
You're at Mike Merles?
I am at Mike Merles.
I saw a tweet from you today about monsters.
Yeah.
Well, I feel really special now.
Well, I'm glad to know that. And I go by Mike Merles online, so I don't really have any aliases to talk about. And
do you want to give you one? Jerry's really good at that.
Could you give me an alias?
Well, here, I need to know more about your inherent nature, but we'll get to it.
Okay, so this is something I have to grow into. Cool.
That's right.
Okay.
You'll earn it.
So, yeah, I run the R&D team, and I'm kind of the head for the D&D Next project. I don't really do a lot of direct design work, but I kind of set a lot of the creative direction and how everything fits together.
So you act mostly as a sponge for internet hatred.
Basically, yeah, I'm kind of like the party tank.
Okay, yeah, understood.
I go up in front, and everyone yells at me, and then while I'm distracting internet hordes, the design team skirts around and delivers quality gaming products to them. So, yeah, that's kind of my job.
All right, well, why don't you tell us about your stuff that you have?
Yeah, so basically, I've got here on my computer the current draft of D&D Next. I figured we could kind of start with a basic overview of the game, kind of tell you guys like what the major changes are, because you have your 4th edition characters, you're all level 10.
Yeah, right.
We're going to kind of walk through and convert those over. But obviously a big part of conversion is how is the game going to play differently. It's not just
right. What
the numbers are, because the way you're playing, there are going to be some changes to it.
Right, okay. Right. And like Mike has played, 4th edition was his first version, and I've played one or another version of D&D since I was like 6. So, I mean, I have seen many different iterations of this system, so I imagine we'll be coming at it a little bit different.
Yeah, that's going to be kind of interesting to see how your questions shape up, because
yeah.
It is...
So yeah, 4th is your first edition, huh?
Yeah. 4th was my first and only edition, yeah.
And in a way, it's kind of an interesting litmus test, because the idea is to make it so it doesn't matter what edition you started with, you can just start playing this game and you recognize it. It's not like some completely weird different thing. It's like, oh yeah, this is D&D. Like, there's always going to be some differences whenever you go from one edition to the next. But our goal is their difference is more like, oh, this works a little bit better, or there's a new option I could take, but I don't know if I want to take that. I just want to take the thing that looks familiar.
Right.
So that's kind of the overriding goal with this. So in a way, like, as far as what's going to be different about the game, probably the one biggest change when you're playing is, so 4th edition is very encounter-based.
There's no dice.
Yeah, exactly. And so, well, they're collectible. They buy booster packs.
Oh,
The dice say hit
smart.
Or miss.
And
you don't even want to joke
blind
about
packs.
That anymore.
blind packs of dice. More D6s.
Oh, jeez.
Now, every box is guaranteed to have 1d20 in it.
Exactly.
So
that's the one they show on the front.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one. So the biggest difference is in 4th, it's all very encounter based. Like, if you're a DM, you build encounters and you kind of put them together to build your adventure.
Yeah.
Your players, everything is very like at the end of the encounter, you rest, get your encounter powers back, you heal up, usually back up to full unless you're near the end, and keep going.
Yeah.
The really big change is we've taken that and we've applied it to the entire adventure or the adventuring day if it's a longer adventure. And the big change there is. So instead of having encounter powers that are coming back, though those are still part of the game, we'll kind of get to those as we go forward. The big change with it is to make it easier for DMs to basically tell different types of stories, to run different types of adventures. One of the big things I got for feedback for 4th was, with each encounter, since there's so much design going on there and there's so many different options and stuff, most fights take about an hour, and that can go even longer as you get up.
Tell me about it. Yeah. So my group.
Yeah, so because everyone has to make a lot of choices, a lot of stuff to track, and that was by design, because if you're giving you all these encounter powers.
Okay, hold on, that's so interesting, because it seems like in a lot of ways that's one of the things you were trying to fix was to give DMs tools to make encounters. So you're saying that you gave them the tools to make encounters, and then the encounters became too long and elaborate?
Basically, yeah. I mean, it's sort of thing was when you have the design and emphasis on encounters, it starts to overshadow the adventure.
Ha! They flew too close to the sun.
Exactly.
To the combat sun.
Well, all right. Yeah, exactly, right? And so I think that's what we've seen with 4th is the combats take probably... I mean, if you want to have an hour-long fight, that's cool. That's what people want to do. But we don't want to make that the default. So it's about making the game a little more flexible. So if you're not really there for the combat or that's not the kind of adventure you want to run, you have a little more flexibility in how you want to approach it. So the idea was to go from having an encounter that takes an hour to, if you want, you can run an entire adventure in an hour. Now, if you want to run a longer adventure, you can just do that. You just stack more stuff or you design the story. But we wanted to get a lot more flexibility in the game. So what that means is when you think of an adventure, instead of the DM going, here's 5 encounters and here's how they fit together, you can almost kind of think the process the DM applies to building an encounter. You're now applying that to the entire adventure. So you might think...
It's a part in an arc that sort of goes, and then this is this one peak here.
Exactly. Yeah, so the individual fights might be shorter, but when you add them all up, it's like one, it's the same amount of resources from a math standpoint. But you might think as a DM, okay, The fight outside's a really easy fight. It's only a couple goblins. That only take a round or two. But then there's the big fight later on against the Goblin King, and that should take like a half hour. And here's like the three waves of guards that show up. And I'm going to stat him out with all these special abilities, spells, or whatever. So really it's about letting DMs pick where they want the complexity to rest. There isn't that minimum threshold of complexity that's a bit higher than it was in past editions. So in play, it probably feels a little bit more like, say, 1st to 3rd edition, but the back-end guts of it are a lot more like 4th, especially for DMs. So the idea is then to give DMs flexibility, so you can start really low with combat and focus more on roleplay. You can go really heavy on combat and just focus on building all that terrain features and interesting tactical puzzles. Creatures are a little more complex, build those yourself or just pick them off the shelf. So there isn't just this emphasis on, here's the encounter, the combat encounter is your main unit. It's the adventure. Then within it, there's different elements you can emphasize.
So when you say, like, coming from 4th edition, I already felt like I could make combats that were simple or really complicated. So when you say, like, the goblin encounter out, the first one is really easy and it's going to be quick. What are you doing to make it quick now?
Yeah, I mean, so you're basically saying that the floor of complexity is lower.
Exactly.
Like, I would have, in 4th edition, I would have just said, put minions in there.
Oh, sure, right. And so the idea is, like, there are ways to do it in 4th. Like, I don't want to make it sound like you just couldn't do it in 4th,
yeah.
Right? But one of the things you may have found in 4th was, like, you could have that quick fight, but if the players take a short rest, it doesn't really have any effect. Like, it has an effect on the story arc, but mechanically, it doesn't have much of an effect on them.
Because if they just get back up.
Exactly, because you get your encounter powers. Like, right. If you got hit, maybe use a healing surge or not. The idea here is that even if you fight, like, basically the minion goblins, if one or two of them hit the fighter, he's now a little bit more banged up for the next fight. Or if you use a spell, spells are all on daily refresh now. So if you use a spell, you kind of feel that sting later on. You can't just alpha strike, basically blow everything you have on the first fight.
You're stretching out the experience.
Exactly.
So you're talking about hit points. I mean, basically, so do you feel like the healing surges, do you feel like that model of healing was a problem? It had to be there because of the focus you placed on fights. Do you feel like that created this problem that you now have to solve? Or
yeah, I think in some ways what happened was between healing surges and encounter powers, like when people would look at their character sheets, there was like two or three pages of just combat abilities.
I have a stack of cards in front of me, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Right. The cards you cut out.
Yeah.
And so I think what happens is it just kind of nudges people to think if they want to do something in the game, their first reaction is they look through their cards or they look through their powers.
But they don't think about what they want to do from a character perspective.
Exactly, right? It starts to kind of push its way up to the forefront, because you think of it, when people are playing D&D, you only have so much processing power, you know, so much bandwidth in your head. So if you're juggling too much mechanical stuff, that might, for some players, and I know there's plenty of players this isn't a problem with, but we're kind of looking at the entire spectrum of players. That just starts to crowd out other things they might want to do.
Well, I mean, just from a perfect example, I mean, let me look at the way this character is. And I love this character. I don't have any problem with this character. I like playing this character. But if you look at the amount of real estate this character takes up, and understand that I have put each of the types of abilities into a stack, it's still taking up like a quarter of this table, my one character. If I was to look at this character sheet, and then I was to say, for example, imagine that I was an alien beast who had beamed down here and I was looking at it, I would say that this is a game about combat.
Yeah, exactly.
What alien is like, take me to your role-playing groups.
Cool aliens that are awesome.
One with great taste.
Yeah, I'm saying that, but that's
it. Would you
like
to meet the president? No,
no.
Do you have any gaming groups?
Show me these polyhedrons. But I'm saying, yeah, I would say this is a game about hitting people.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's part of the game. And
yeah.
If you want that to be the game, you want it to be the game. But I think the key is for us, when you think of role-playing games, the thing that makes an RPG different from other types of games
is the role aspect?
Yeah, is that you can do anything, right? Like, if you just say, like, if a lot of games, I think almost every other type of game, you're basically looking at what's in your hand of cards, you're looking at what your choices or actions are, whatever it is. In a role-playing game, you can describe anything, and the DM just uses the rules to figure out how it works.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, as a DM, I already felt like they could do anything. So you're trying to make, codify the fact that they can do anything?
No, I think they're actually trying to decodify it.
It's a bit, yeah.
They're trying to uncodify it. Now I'm just messing with you. But I think that what happens is that players think in this card way.
Mike, you taught me a rule specifically for my group, which is to speed up combat, give them a +2 to their rolls if they know what they're going to do when we get to them.
Yeah.
Because what was the problem? You get to someone, you're like, all right, you're up. Brian, you're up. And he goes,
Yeah. Right?
And I would give them a plus to their rolls if they had their card picked out.
So they can choose anything. And
but
no...
that was the whole game, was them. Everyone is not paying attention to what's happening or participating. They're looking at what they're going to do next. The game was most fun when they would kind of break free of that, and we would stop necessarily just kind of adhering to whatever their cards could do.
Yeah, I mean, they could have done it.
Yeah.
Right? But this is... Imagine like in the UI of this game, if these are all the buttons. I mean, so in order to think about something outside of this construction, the first thing you're going to look to is what's on the table.
And what was your other rule? You made skills a free action to encourage them to do more skills.
Yeah, I did.
So you were heading this direction anyway, Mike. You just don't know it. You were making D&D next, and you didn't even know.
Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that already a DM could do whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
I didn't,
because it's a role-playing game.
Yeah, I mean, when I say I played 4th edition, I played, like, every DM. I played my version of 4th edition, right?
Right.
Like, we had so many house rules and, you know, like Scott's saying, shit that I just came up with on my own.
Yeah.
I mean, my 3D planets are behind you on that table. Like, we did crazy stuff. Like, I already felt like I could do whatever I wanted with these rules. So I don't understand why I need a new set of rules that I can do whatever I want with.
He's right, Mike. Pack this shit up and get out of here.
I'm coming. I've never had to deal with another edition. I don't understand why I need another edition of something I can do whatever I want with.
No, exactly. You need to be sold on it. That is perfectly reasonable.
Yeah. No.
You want me to get all new books and rules, right? I mean,
that's the thing, right? I mean, you could see, yeah, sure. I loved it if everyone just bought everything new every month that came out. But honestly, at the end of the day, if you're playing fourth and you enjoy it, there's no reason to stop playing, right?
I mean, okay.
One of the things with the new edition is we don't want people to. I don't want people to feel like. If you're playing the new edition, you're not playing D&D anymore, that you're being, like, left out in the cold and all that. Because there are going to be plenty of people who... I mean, there are people who still play first edition, original D&D.
Sure.
Because I think a lot of it is DM, you're creating stuff, and if you find a set of tools that works for you, why... I mean, obviously, it's great if we can make a game that you look at and go, okay, this is great, I want to move on to the new edition because it's doing what I want. And that's a challenging phase, right?
Yeah.
Because we've got all these different audience people who want, you know, different things out of D&D. So in some ways, that's the real challenge. But at the end of the day, it's really about playing the version of the game that makes you the happiest. Because a lot of the stuff, and this is the thing that I think the big thing about D&D is, since every group is different, when we talk about these things, I as the game designer guy can only talk about general trends, right? This is generally what we see in the audience. This is kind of like the bigger picture thing. But that doesn't mean anything when you look at individual gaming groups and tables. Because everyone's experience of the game is different. I think that's what makes D&D great, is it isn't just the same thing for everybody. And if fourth's working for you, I mean, that's... I mean, fourth's a great game, right? So I don't think there's any sense that you have to move on or you're making a mistake or something like that.
So if I want to take my 4th edition Jim Dark Magic and make him a next edition Dungeons & Dragons character, that's the goal here, right?
Yeah, that's basically what we're going to look at converting over. So I have a question for that. So when you think about fourth, like, what do you think, are there any specific things in the game that you're not happy with or that you have, like, house-ruled and wish you had bigger solutions to? I'm just curious to see, like, when you've been playing the game.
For me, as a DM, my biggest problem, I would say, was that by the time they reached level 20 or so, I had a very hard time... I felt challenging them.
Well, the party was there. It was
within the rules of the game.
Yeah. It was a pantheon by that point.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely make up stuff and tweak rules and cheat to hurt them. And by level 20, I really did have to cheat, like, to hurt them. I felt like if I were to just use the math, boy, they were going to kick my ass every time in an encounter.
Interesting. Yeah.
So they were bad.
They were bad news bears. I mean. My group came from card players. Like, they like having cards, and they like thinking about synergies between cards. And, you know, it's one thing to think about synergies in a deck, but this is a group of 5 card players thinking about synergies between 5 decks.
Yeah.
I mean, they were setting themselves up for attacks and powers that were just insane.
I mean, it was like 5 tournament Magic players that had created a single 5-headed meta deck.
Yeah.
It was spooky.
And so, by level 20, I had sort of stopped doing as many encounters, and we were playing a lot more where we would play nights that you know, we're almost all role-playing.
Okay, cool.
You know?
So in some ways, okay, so in some ways you're kind of like, the system had served its purpose, and you'd kind of move beyond it in some ways, like in terms of what you're thinking of, like, for the session. It wasn't, you weren't leaning on the numbers to get things
No,
going.
I would say what I was leaning on was the lore and the, you know, I loved the books that would give me, you know, locations and NPCs and hooks for ideas and stuff like that. And I wasn't relying so much on the math anymore.
So that's something where, I mean, even if you look at Next and think it's just terrible, you don't want to play it. I mean, a lot of the stuff, one of the things we want to be able to do as we go forward, because we know not everyone's going to come over, right? So as we're doing products, whatever else we're writing about, a lot of that stuff is still just going to be the lore of D&D.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's still going to be stuff that, you know, if you go to the store, you can still pick up adventures or whatever, or just source books on different locations or places. So I think in a lot of ways, even if the rules don't make sense to you, if anything, we're going to be emphasizing more the story end of things and
okay.
the world building and stuff. Because I think that's pretty common in 4th, is one of the things that happens is, since it is so driven by the mechanics and character building and the combinations between characters, that what you just described is something that I think happens quite often.
Mm.
That it's just one DM against five players. Really, it's a five-on-one game.
Yeah.
And that's in some ways, like in Next, we're trying to address that. I mean, it's a tricky thing because you don't want to tell people, like, in the new edition, your character will suck, right? Like, you just, you know, you're half as powerful as used to be. But
right.
the bigger picture is trying to make it so that those combinations, like, especially as encounter powers, you can't pull them off as often as you were able to before. That's, you're not just getting maybe everything back and being able to do it again.
Yeah, I mean, you're essentially going in under the hood of the combat economy.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, you're trying to alter the ratios.
Yeah,
those abilities.
Yeah, it's the tempo. That if you have something that's a real that you can go Nova, you can't say through a combination of encounter powers just Nova every single fight.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to kind of pick your moment to shine. So I'd be kind of curious to see how that kind of, like, you know, as you kind of look at the system, if that, any of that kind of speaks to you. But,
yeah.
But we're definitely, we want to, I mean, it's part of it is getting more towards story and less toward mechanics because of that, because there are so many different editions out there and people have different preferences. So we want to talk about your specific characters, or
let's do it.
Yeah, okay. Who wants to be first up? So this is going to be, I got to kind of warn you up front. This is looking to be a little experimental because right now
it's basically a huge Word doc, right?
Yeah, a huge is would be generous way to describe it. It's a number of smaller Word docs that go up to 5th level. So
oh, I see.
Now you guys are 10th level, and so the thing is, I have all my design guidelines here, so I can start doing some stuff for higher level stuff. That's the wrong one. Sorry, it's technical difficulties. Opening up a few files here.
Man.
So who wants to go first?
I mean, Omen should probably start. I mean, he's the boss, right?
I agree.
Yeah, let's give it a try. And also, I want to know what it means to be a D&D Next cleric. Because one of the things that I thought was kind of cool coming into 4th from previous versions was just the idea of a healing strike.
Yes, exactly, yep.
Like, I mean, it seemed like the healing strike was designed to create...
Was that new to 4th?
The idea that you could hit and heal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Previously, you were doing your group a disservice if you didn't dump all of your spells into heals. It was your whole job. Because remember, without Second Wind and without these other mechanisms for healing, the cleric was it.
Oh, okay.
So their job was so important. It's like, you know what I mean? It's like when you play your druid in a raid.
Yeah.
Your job is just the green bars. The cleric.
If I did damage, I got in trouble.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
And it was the same thing. The cleric is there exclusively to manage green bars.
Yeah. Okay.
And so the idea that I could manage a green bar while lowering their red bar was a revolution. And so, I mean, especially because, I mean, in some ways, like for a warrior, I liked the tanking mechanics. I liked that I could try to, you know, that warriors could pull heat off of people. But at the same time, you know, the rest of their attacks, warriors are wizards in a lot of ways, just mechanically speaking, right? And that's a return to an older style of play to go back from that. And I wonder what that means for...
I'm guessing this is the part of the podcast where he says that they got rid of Healing Strike. I'm just...
Yeah, no, I feel very confident that I'm about to receive a letter in the mail... From the general
That's a good segue into healing. The conversation about Healing Strike.
I want to enter into a dialogue about Healing Strikes and how they don't exist.
So, actually, that's actually one of the things which is nice about the way we're approaching the system math, is since we're assuming people want to be able to do that, we can build that into the game.
Okay, so tell me what that means.
It means that he's going to go into his Word doc right now and go, we need to add a healing strike.
Right.
Healing strike, you can do it every turn.
So people get healed. So the big change in healing is it's not encounter-based, it's daily. Like, you know, if you cast a healing spell, it's gone. But for clerics... yes, but for clerics, you get Channel Divinity is now purely healing. You can just use it. So Channel Divinity back in the day was Turn Undead, mm-hmm. fourth edition. It lets you access a different power base.
It's a power source that you can exactly. invest in different things, yeah.
So what we did, we decided, since clerics iconically heal, every cleric just gets a healing ability. And now, if you want, depending on what god you take, you can swap that out. If you're like a cleric of the god of assassins, you don't heal, and you can choose something else.
You do the opposite of healing.
Yeah, exactly.
Or hurting, as it is sometimes okay. called.
But that's kind of like the standard like onboard option, you know, kind of when you buy a car, like you're getting a radio.
So yeah,
like,
yeah.
Okay, the same thing. If you want to swap it out, you can swap
This is
it.
Not aftermarket.
Yeah, exactly. And then what, really, from there, it's just a matter of, typically speaking, if you want to attack and heal, your heal is about half what it would be if you spent your entire action, but we're basically giving you that option to choose. Do you want to be more of a fighting cleric where you're fighting and healing, or do you want to be more of a support cleric? Because that's one of the things we found in
fourth. Well, so, somebody wants to do that.
Exactly.
I would never say that that was not true.
Yeah.
But I don't.
Yeah, so exactly. So it's just one of the big things with Next is saying people want to play classes in different ways, so we can just design it to meet that. And I think it's been one of the big things we've been learning in the past couple of years. One of the nice things of having the different editions and the feedback we've been getting is you get a pretty good sense of what, like, if people say like playing a cleric, they mean different things. But this is all really about saying, okay, well, what are those things? And how
right,
support?
Right, right. So you're saying that but healing is a daily ability, but you're saying that I can still hit and heal?
Yeah.
Tell me how that would work.
So it's pretty straightforward. So you can imagine if you have a healing spell. So here, you know what? I'll actually pull one out as an example. I can just read it from this file here if I can find it. So let's see. Or of course, let me guess. Like, this would be the punchline. It's actually not in this file. Here we go. So the spell called Healing Word. It's
okay.
Right here in the file.
Right, I have the old version here. The old great version. You're about to fuck up.
So right now, basically is... Okay, and this actually goes back to another big change to the mechanics of the game.
Yeah.
This is all about trying to streamline things.
So it's not move minus standard?
Paper.
It's just action and move.
It's all in your head.
So you only have one action.
Action and move?
Yep, action and move.
Interesting. And okay, so again, it's about economy, right?
Exactly. Oh, no. Because you guys have to make a whole new t-shirt.
No.
Move minus standard no longer applies.
But essentially what we're talking about... is you had move,
quick,
which was the classic one,
an action yep. move
right?
Shirt.
You had move, and you had your standard action, and so that's what you have now.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
But you also had the and change portion with that minor action.
Yeah. So and so the big reason for that change, and you guys talked this a little bit earlier. It's so people focus on doing one thing. So it's your turn. What do you want to do? You do that.
That's
you
your action.
Yeah. Exactly. One of the things we found with minor actions was, and actually it was kind of interesting watching, because we have like this, we bring in people sometimes to play D&D, and you like watch them and see how it plays out. People, they have minor actions. So they think, well, what should I do with this? And you'd see players kind of stop and think, well, what should I do?
They get paralyzed.
Yeah, because it's a resource, right? Like you figure if you're playing a game, you have resources, you spend them all, because you're going to lose it if you don't use it. So
okay.
it ended up, so what we did, is instead of saying, hey, everyone gets a minor action, we just said, the spell's right here, right? When you cast a spell, you heal someone. And you can also make an attack or cast a second spell.
So as a player, though, like if it comes to my turn and you know we open a door and there's goblins, right? Is it an action to draw my sword?
Nope. And that's something we said, too, is actions are pretty much like the main thing you do. So the DM, and we tried to make an exhaustive list, but just gave a lot of examples. Like things like drawing your sword, talking to somebody... Even like
all those things,
those are minor actions.
All the and change. Well, no, now they don't exist.
Yeah, they're just flavor.
They're not inside, right?
Okay.
They're not governed by the rule set.